asking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports performance coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey. How are we doing tonight, D-Mac?
They say better late than never, but never late is better. We late night burning the oils, you know what I'm saying, getting ready to have this conversation. What are we, O-line, D-line tonight? Lots of Sooner updates, lots to discuss going on with the depth chart, with the pods, 2026 season, who are your three common opponents going to be? And then, of course, man, it's game week, baby. Like, we got a game to watch Saturday. Well, we got a schedule for our pre. I just thought about it. We ain't even talked about the pre-show. I miss doing the pre-show and then the post-show. Ah, man, I'm just excited for it to be football season. And, yeah, man. By the way, shout out to these OGs with us. I see Mac in the room. I see Bernard. I see Christian. Salute. You guys are locking in with us late night, man. Salute to you guys. Let's jump right into it, man. We got a lot to discuss tonight.
Absolutely, man. I want to let everybody know the show tonight, as always, brought to you by OU Insider, OUinsider.com. Go over there, get yourself a membership. They have been flooding the board with information. Brandon Drum, Parker Thune, go follow those guys on socials. They have been bringing the heat in terms of camp information, recruiting info. They were all over the Jake Kruhl commitment, all of the insight that you would want to know going on behind the scenes. Those gentlemen do a fantastic job, as well as everybody else over there. And this season, I know we've pumped it a lot, but just to remind you one more time, DMAC will be posting the infamous 10 thoughts on a weekly basis after each game.
Can't wait.
It written format as well as video. I'll be doing analysis as we go. Have some stuff I'm cooking up right now. Immediate stuff right after the game. And then throughout the week, I'll talk about different players. Talk about guys who I think have made a jump from an athletic perspective. Players who are going to be evaluating, testing better, looking better in terms of NFL scouting, and covering really the entire Sooner team at a more in-depth level. That's what we were brought on OU Insider to do, and that's what we're going to continue to do this year. But DMAC, as you said, it is game week. There was a Venables press conference today, and we will get to that. But first, man, we have got to talk about the release of the depth chart, and I am pulling it up right now as we speak. There were some surprises on there, some things that we didn't see coming, and we'll use it to also segue into discussing the O-line, because I think there's a lot to unpack there. We've talked about Beanbo and what we expect out of him and his group this season, but I don't want to waste any time, DMAC. I'm going to just run through the list. We're going to go offense first. I think that's where, surprise-wise, there were some things, right? And there's some specific stuff that I want to ask you about in terms of the receiver position, where guys are slotted. But we'll start at quarterback, John Mateer, backing him up. You have Hawkins and Neubauer. I don't think there's a surprise there. I think that pretty much par for the course. I'm going to skip the next position. Going to go to X. Keontez Lewis at one, Ivan Carrion, and then Elijah Thomas at that third spot. You got to feel that that's, you know, freshman, not really earned the stripes yet necessarily. And I heard that he did have a great camp, but he had some freshman hiccups, some freshman issues. So that's just part of growing. At tight end, Jaron Kanick gets the nod at the one spot. And then left guard, Heath Ozeda. I don't think that's a surprise. Left tackle, Michael Fasusi. We know he had the scare at camp, but it seems like he's doing good. And just so folks know, it was a story, but to a lot of the players who were at camp that day, DMAC, and this is straight about as close from the horse's mouth as you can get, it was a non-story to some of the guys who were on the field. It wasn't even the first thing they came off the field talking about. There were other things that were more highlighted. Center, you got Troy Everett backing him up, Jake Mykula, and then you have Fabechi Nwewu, a guy who we were on last year, you know, thought was one of the better offensive linemen. Venables talked about him in the presser today. And then at right tackle, you have Derek Simmons, Logan Howland at the number two spot there. And then at H, Isaiah Satania, and then 88, Jacob Jordan backing him up.
Oh, yeah, he is.
And then at Z, playing the Z spot, you got Deion Burks with Jermichael Carter. Two different bodies at the Z spot, two different ways to attack, you know, with Burks being more of a traditional looking slot guy, you know, at 5'9", 190, and then Jermichael Carter, a much longer player, 6'2", 200, and then Zion Kearney, man, third team, could not break through. But running back position, where I want to start this thing, Javonte Barnes, the number one back, followed by Torrey Blaylock, and then Jaden Ott or Xavier Robinson. What do you think of the running back spot on the depth chart, D-Mac, with Barnes getting that nod at one? Knowing Ott was a little banged up, but he's your premium back you bring in the offseason. Won't say any numbers, but there were some big numbers thrown around for him, obviously. So what are your thoughts seeing that initially?
I look at this, and to me, what this tells me is standards and accountability. I guess I could even sum it up by saying health as well. I think thematically, as it relates to the entire depth chart, not even just running back or not even just offense, but throughout the team, I think what the coaches are trying to establish is an idea of the best type of ability is availability. And reward the guys who stayed healthy, because you're going to need those guys through an SEC schedule. And so as it relates to running back, if you want to know my personal opinion, I think coaches want to reward guys who've been in the program, their program guys. Well, this is Barnes's fourth year, I believe. So for him to be around 4 years, from all reports, we've heard that he had a positive camp. And I think most people who listen to our pod know I'm not the biggest Barnes fan in the world. However, if you go back into the archives, and I'm not changing my opinion of Barnes, I'll give you my opinion of Barnes here in a second, but it's a new offense. And one thing about running backs is kind of like that boxing match, you know, cliche where they say, you know, styles make fights, right? Well, the same can be said for a running back. If you've got a one cut back, or if you've got a I need to get in space back, or if you got a back who needs to be in the slot and catch a bunch of swing passes and, you know, angle routes and things of that nature, the style of the back will make the offense go or be stagnant. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what Barnes can do in a one cut game plan, right? We're going to be putting him in a position where we'll be running some gap assignment stuff, but a lot of zone scheme stuff where he gets to find a crease and hit it. It'll be interesting to see how he performs. Now, I say all that to say this. He's not the best runner we have on the team. He's not the most natural runner we have on the team. He's not the most gifted guy we have on the team, nor is he the most elusive. So when you're looking at the attributes that make a running back great, whether we're in a one cut or we're in a man blocking scheme or get downhill as fast as you can, or you got to have a ton of wiggle, there's just enough film out there. He's had a couple hundred carries, or more than 100 carries in his Sooner career. We've seen what he can do when there's nothing there. Can he create? We've seen what he can do when there's daylight and there's 10 yards of availability because it's blocked up well. What can he do in the second and third level? If he is our bell cow, which we know he's not. I mean, there's economics now, right? The economics of the sport says Ott's going to play. We're paying for the kid to be here. He's going to play. And the economics say the puppy's going to play, right? He showed up in camp. He's showing up as a second stringer. The puppy's going to play. And then X-Rob kind of has like, hey, I kind of showed up in some games last year when no one else showed up, right? So I think running back by committee is very safe to say for now. I also am not – I don't have an issue in the world with Barnes getting the nod for the first game of the season. That goes down in the record books as who was the starter. It'll be interesting to see if he runs out there the first possession of the game, because there probably is some competition. There's probably let me say this too, Barry, and I'm sorry if I'm, but I think this is important for people to understand.
Go for it. Hit it, man.
When you go from week zero to week one, when you go from breaking camp to week zero, it's a different mentality. We talked about it, right? We didn't go into fall camp in terms of the psychology like we did. I think we did that last summer, right? We talked about the very beginning and how as camp matriculates, just thematically how things are at reps and all that stuff is disseminated. There were plenty of times where the depth chart was used to send a message. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember, I don't know if I was ever third team. I don't think I was ever third team, but I was like a second teamer. Back in the day, Bob used to put us next to each other. So there wasn't an or. It would be H. It would say Debbie Mackey, Josh Norman, like next to each other, right?
Oh, wow.
And if you were second team, you'd be underneath. And then if you were third team, you'd be underneath. And then they'd have a line which notified travel squad. So like some positions only had two deep that could travel. So, you know, it might be two. And then the third name, your name is in gray. Like, I'm not traveling. I do believe this depth chart in Sooner Nation, I want you guys to understand this. They put that chart out. They make the chart last week. So this is based upon last week's performance or the culmination of fall camp up to last week's performance. Let somebody ball out this week, or let Ott be fully healthy and the trainers and the medical staff and strength coaches say he's 100%, and let him go out. What's today? Tuesday? A Tuesday, Wednesday practice. Mm-hmm. Wednesday is generally where they do blitz pickup, and let him pick up the blitz and let him do, you know, squirt out of there. Don't trust and believe he could be the first guy to pop out, or Blaylock. The same could be said about other positions. But as it pertains specifically to Barnes, I'm not going to pick on him week one. We're playing Illinois State. You know, I think this is going to be a game where a lot of guys are going to get to play. So we'll rotate a lot of guys in and out. How he plays might let us know if he's a guy they call on early against Michigan. Listen, if he plays well, I'm going to say he played damn well. Good. He grew up this year. But if we have to do the Tulane film again, remember how many people – were giving me flack about that until we broke the film down. Like, look, here's the play. It's 1v1 versus safety. He's got 6 yards and he gets form tackled. You don't want that to be your starting running back. He literally got form tackled.
It's the film. It was like a drill, guys.
It's not my opinion.
Yeah.
People were hammering me. I was like, let's break the film out. And you break out the film. It's blocked up great. He's in the alley, C gap, the safety's bananaing in inside out, and he's got inside leverage on him, no wiggle, form tackle, 8 yard game. Like, damn. Anyway, we'll see how things go. I'm excited about what could potentially happen.
Absolutely, man. And before we get to O-line, because we'll spend a little more time there, quarterback, interestingly enough, I want to get your quick take on this. Venables was asked in the press conference, will John Mateer this Saturday do anything that surprises you? When he goes and takes the field, is there an aspect of him that you don't know about, that you feel is unclear, right? You don't know what kind of guy Jackson Arnold was going to be when he took the field as a leader, first game, you know, first time really being the man. And first game, you know, what we saw some hiccups, but not the things we saw down the road. In this one, Venable said that there really wasn't anything that he feels John is going to go out there and do that he hasn't seen on film. John has put some great film out there. You know, Mateer, when he was at Washington State, and obviously what he's done since being at Oklahoma, has been nothing but produce quality play after quality play. We heard fantastic stuff out of fall. Receivers able to catch balls, the big plays, explosives, the run game being a bit more versatile because of that passing threat. And then what Mateer can do with his feet, yeah. I don't think that has been talked enough in this offseason. It was one of my favorite things. And not in terms of just being an explosive guy, right? Because I do think he has some wiggle, some Baker kind of explosiveness, which means short area bursts, probably not going to have the long speed. But another guy who I would compare him to from a footwork standpoint, who had some of the smoothest, coldest footwork I've ever seen, especially in college, but in the pros too. And that's Joe Burrow. He was a guy who wasn't going to out-athlete you at any point. He was a really, really good athlete, and in a situation can make you miss, especially if he's got leverage on the field. But I think Mateer has those same type of fluidity attributes to the way he moves in his lower half, and then not to mention just the explosiveness as a passer. But I thought it was interesting. D-Mac, just your quick take on Venable's comments on Mateer.
Number one, he's a better athlete than Joe Burrow, a more explosive runner, I guess I should say. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow is a solid athlete, but he's a more explosive runner. But let me just tell you, let me interpret what BV was saying. And again, I say this with the most humility, being an ex-Sooner who played with my buddy who is officially exiled to Tennessee. What BV is saying is we now have a system and an offense that we know there is a plan in place and a scheme developed for a quarterback to do what he's told to do. And that's not necessarily a knock at Seth, but it is a knock, because last year the offense was helter-skelter and they didn't really know who they were, which, by the way, part of it's your quarterback, part of it's your injuries, part of it's the new transfer portal, trying to figure out just how to leverage the transfer in a way. Do you do a lot? Do you do seniors? Do you do sophomores, right? I think this year there's a very clear plan. There's a very clear leader in the offensive coordinator, where BV doesn't have to babysit the offense. That clear leader has his guy who he's coached and been in rooms with for years. And I think the coach, well, actually, I know the coaches feel confident with their skill guys, number one, including receivers. We'll talk about the receiver help, but they feel much better this year about receiver ability this year than last year. And they feel much better around what the offensive line is going to be asked to do per the scheme. So when we hear BV say, oh, I feel like my quarterback is going to do what he's always done and what we've seen on film and other things that I've studied, what he's really saying is offense is supposed to be a repetitious situation where you rep it into second nature. And last year, they really didn't know who they are, so they didn't really rep who they were, versus this year, there's a very clear plan, directive, leadership, communication, all of that stuff is streamlined in the same direction, being aligned, and that starts with the OC. I wouldn't be surprised if, because of that, you see a lot more BV's hands on the defensive side, nuance, tricks, things of that nature. So one, I think having an experienced quarterback, we said it on last week's show, or maybe 2 weeks ago, or the 2109, we said, like, we have a new quarterback, but we don't have a new quarterback, right? Because our quarterback is the brain trust of our OC, and they are both in alignment. Everybody else is just executors, right? If they rep the stuff since offseason, they just got to execute with the play, the signal, the sign, the whatever the thing is, they just got to execute. The quarterback and the OC are the two who need to see stuff, you know, consolidate and really check into the things we need to be in. So it's a huge plus for us. It's a huge plus for us. I think it's worth 6 points against Michigan. I think it's worth a touchdown against Michigan. I really do. There's not going to be good film, but we know what we need to do when we open up more of the playbook. Michigan's not going to know what, right, we're going to be doing, because Wazoo doesn't have the talent we have. So therefore, I guarantee you there are things Wazoo wanted to do but couldn't do because generally they had the deficient line, or they didn't have enough, you know, skill guys, or maybe one, and they could just double. We're going to have opportunities that are going to be worth a touchdown when we play Michigan. And what BV said about Mateer tells you the quiet confidence he has holistically in the system. And that's how I interpret that.
So the name had been thrown around in some of the like post-practice availability. And the one where I really appreciated it, mm-hmm, and thought it meant the most was when Beedenbaugh was talking about it. And you could tell Beedenbaugh was sort of shading or how would I say this? Just being very careful with his word choice, but really wanting to compare him to a young Lincoln Riley, talking about Arbuckle.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that, you know, say what you want about Riley and how he left Oklahoma and what he did at USC. Absolutely one heck of an offensive coordinator. And one of the reasons why, as someone who works with athletes, works with young athletes, athletes in the college ranks. One of the things that matters is just having a clear plan and system and being confident, right? That if you are not confident and you go to work with young men and they sense that, they will fold. They will feel that pressure. They will feel your uncertainty. And say what you want about Lincoln, one of the things that he was so good at was knowing how to rep something and rep something and rep something until you just can't get it wrong, not until you get it right, which last year felt like it was a lot of repping until you get it right. That's what it sounds like. We've heard a little bit out of Auburn, some out of Texas, is let's rep it until we execute. All right, sounds good. Let's move off. When Lincoln was here, OU rep stuff until you couldn't mess it up, until it was second nature. You sort of talked about that under Leach with the concepts that you guys did with the complexity, but also simplicity of the game and what you knew to do and how you knew based on what the defense was doing, how you knew to run your route, how you knew to, you know, what to switch to in different scenarios. Yeah. And I think we're feeling that with Arbuckle. And that, you're right, it probably is worth 6 to 10 points in a game against Michigan. And it's worth a lot down the season, especially in games where if OU just had an offense a year ago, you're talking completely different result. And I think it cannot be understated or overstated enough just what having a coach who understands repetition and understands repeating and creating good habits and patterns, what that means. Because just because a guy is coaching in the college ranks does not mean that they have a firm grasp on that. That does not mean that they have a full understanding. Quick thoughts on receiver D-Max Ategna. Not a surprise as a starter with what we've heard coming out of camp. He was an H. You don't see Burks there. I think in that scenario, you're just trying to get your two best guys on the field, I would imagine. And Burks can still do some serious damage at Z. And then you have Keontez Lewis playing the X spot. But you see those three starters. What are your quick thoughts? And then we'll go to O-line.
I think it's, well, speaking to those two first, those are two guys who had a very strong fall. You know, it's interesting. I heard Burks a little bit underwhelmed. Did what he was supposed to do. He's a guy that knows some of the things he can do. But I think the competition in the room improved. And I think last year there were a bunch of 6'2 to 6'4 type guys who were longer X type receivers, right? Andrew Anthony, Anderson, Gibson, right? You know, these are longer ranged guys. Satania and Co. brought more competition for him in the slot, competition for him with Wiggle, competition for him with COD. And he's a guy, by the way, they've paid him a pretty penny. And so he's a guy who we know he's going to be getting his fair share of plays. But listen, I'm not saying nothing that everybody else doesn't already know, but I'm just telling you, the kid from Markey, I'm just hearing he's got dog in him and is a little less, I don't want to use the word diva, okay? I don't want to use that word, but just he's a dog. And maybe a little less finesse than some of these other guys who are worried about really looking cute, really how did I look doing it versus get her done. I'm going to look swaggy getting her done, you know? And so I think that's healthy for Burks because I think Burks has a high ceiling. I think Burks is an NFL guy, assuming he can do what I think he can do. But I think the Arky kid is too. And so I look at the receiver group, the rest of those guys, I think there's a lot of opportunity. X is wide open. I would love for Kerryon to be a guy who could be a legitimate 6'6 X, get his wits about him and get comfortable in man coverage. That can be a guy who can high point, catch the fade at your face. They call it a face fade, right? Where you just box out the DB and the quarterback's going to put it on your face. And you just put your body in between his, you mid it out in front. You really can't cover it. There's some things that I think his body type really gives us. I like the other two guys. I like, let me see, the names. I went back and watched some film.
Jermichael Carter. Okay, Keontae Lewis has had his back half of fall has been better than his first half of
He
fall.
was a little beaten up a little bit, but he's got great energy and he's got strong mitts. I think the rest of those guys are interchangeable. I think they're waiting for the Gibson brothers to come back. And I did hear some news about Jaden that wasn't the greatest, but Giovanni that's very promising. And so I think once those guys get back and you just plug one of those guys in at X, and then you've got Satania at the H, and then you've got Burks at the Z, and then of course Burks can pay H and a pickle if we're needing him to. That's good depth. I think that, listen, people talk about like LSU's receivers, and they've got some highly recruited guys. You don't always need the most highly recruited guys. You need guys that mesh well in a system. Our guys can be dangerous. I think the receivers is a solid B group. Get healthy, maybe a B plus group, middle of the pack for the SEC, but it'll be interesting to see with not a lot of film what these guys bring to the table, especially the first half of conference and the first and the Michigan game.
Absolutely, man. And I think you hit it right on the head. When you have a quarterback who can put the ball where it needs to go, and then you get guys confident and have, you're right, Satania and Burks, both NFL level ceilings, both guys who are totally draftable in kind of that mid-round possible low, high, low second, high third. Round, especially if they test well. Miss Satania, here's some good stuff about his athleticism. I think we've learned a lot of what Burks is. But let's talk O-line real quick before we move over to the defensive side of the ball.
I'm laughing at Carlos. Carlos, your comment is hilarious.
Getting after it. You got Hito Zeta, who we heard and saw a ton last year in terms of feistiness along that front. He has a lot of that in him, and I think Fabecchi does too. You've got in the you've got Derek Simmons and then Howland taking over the other spot. You've got Fasusi, who has had a wonderful camp, who Beanbo has said it without saying it, that he has come in and just learned the system very quickly. He's picked up on the technique, talking Fasusi, and he's a guy who had the body, he was ready to go. We saw him being recruited, and we said a lot of those five stars, sometimes they're just a little too lean. The muscles have not developed, they haven't matured to what they need to really be to handle an elite edge player, particularly in the SEC. But in Fasusi's case, I don't know how often they're going to line him up and match him up with their best weak side D end. I feel like a lot of times that's going to be Simmons' responsibility within the games, maybe Howland, who's got a little more size and girth. But I think Fasusi is going to be able to handle himself this upcoming season. In terms of pro ceiling, he's got the best, I believe, on the offensive line. I do think Howland still has an opportunity, but he's got to still develop in some key areas, particularly footwork, get a little quicker with some things. And then I think a big piece to their success this year is having a healthy Everett at that center spot
Definitely.
all year. He impacts that O-line. We said it last year, man. When he doesn't play, you feel it up the middle. Not just the experience, the kind of things that a guy like Creed brought, that a guy like Eichard and Darlington brought, but it's also just his girth. You remember when OU switched from Casatati to Eric Wren, and you saw what happened to
Dang, you
that.
going back into the archives, bro.
But you saw it. Casatati was a good player. You also had there was another guy. I want to say that would have been Darlington too in that era. And then you saw Wren in 17. It was almost like the missing piece to really taking that offensive line to another level. He was a big body who can move. You're opening up more things in the run game because your center has got to be able to snap the ball, get their head up, get out of their stance. If you have a center who can't move and who isn't girthy, doesn't take up space, you're limited in some of the stuff you can do inside and some of the stuff you can do outside because that defensive tackle, if he's a dog, that knows that if he has a good explosive first step, he's going to blow up a lot of the things that you want to do. And you know as well as any, if your interior of your O-line is getting pushed around, you are very limited. So thoughts on offensive line and just the potential that this group has this upcoming season.
I'm gonna throw us a kudos. People last year, I remember they put Ozita in, and we were like, he didn't play bad. He was a puppy. He was turning his shoulders, is what howling to a two, right? Those guys are turning their shoulders. They were given a short porch. But guys, they had a base and they could extend their arms. And if they got their hands on you and they were able to move people, the offensive line started being able to move people a little bit. We got hammered for 54 and for the puppies. And I get it. We were playing bad as a team and the system wasn't very good. And we, by the way, we had no depth to the playbook, right? It was basically option one, option two, option three. So it was easy for defenses to read. You see what some of those guys can do. And we said it, we'll see next year. And I'm not surprised to see some of those guys accelerate and get better. I also want to speak to Fasasi. He played with my nephew. But he's not my nephew, he's my little cousin. My little cousin plays for Louisville, and he transferred in from some other school. By the way, top recruit in 2027. Oh, you had a chance. I think they wanted him at, I don't know. He's in love with SMU and Vanderbilt. By the way, he's got offers from all over. And SMU and Vandy are the two schools he's really looking into. But he said, Mac, he said, Fasusi knew everybody's job at Louisville. And first guy off the bus, last guy on the bus. My nephew was a sophomore, or my cousin was a sophomore. His name is DJ Martin. And he was like, he would look out for me as a skill sophomore, just like he would look after the other guys. That's leadership. I'm just telling you, that's worth, you have no idea how much that's worth, especially when you're one of the best athletes on the field and you're an offensive lineman. So I don't think this is just a warning to Sexton. I think he's a better player than Sexton. And so I part of me says, oh, you want to go with the vet, but Sexton kind of hasn't played in 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, it ain't like he's got 22 starts the last two seasons, maybe four, and like two of those he's hurt. I think the pup has a great opportunity here. Let him have some success against Illinois State and let them bring some edge pressure. And he recognizes it and satellites out. And he doesn't turn his shoulders when they do some type of twist. And he's able to manhandle that end on the edge. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him get a real shot against Michigan week two. I firmly believe that. By the way, Carlos, cute. You know what I'm saying? Salute. Michigan has one of our guys there coaching them up. You know what I'm saying? We're going to show some love, but we about to whoop that ass. Like, you over here talking cute. You know what I'm saying, bro? We'll see. Next Saturday, come back after that game. And we're going to see how things shake out playing Michigan week two. I think the offensive line is – and last year, if you remember, we were like, I want to say that'd be good, but we couldn't do it. I think they're going to be a plus. I think they're going to be a plus. There is reason to believe. They've got to – we said it last year. Like, look, the thing about an offensive line that is a young offensive line is you find out if the guys – aren't any good, or if they were young and needed reps. Ozita got a ton of reps. EPL got a ton of reps. 54 EPL, got a ton of reps. Howland got a good portion of reps. You know what I'm saying? Like, those guys had to play SEC football and an offseason and a spring and a summer and a fall camp. And they'll get a warm-up game against Michigan, right? They'll probably play into the third quarter, and then they'll be sitting on the sideline because we'll be up 37 points. I'm just poking fun at buddy. But those reps are worth their weight in gold your sophomore year. I remember playing my freshman year, and I played well as a freshman. 30 balls, four touchdowns. I caught four tugs as a puppy and just came back that much more confident my sophomore year. Like, I never got jammed an entire play my entire sophomore season because I knew how to play the position, recognize coverage. Those offensive linemen are going to be able to read knuckles, read stance, pre-snap seeing things. They're going to have watched a ton more film as a college athlete, not a high school kid trying to consume. I feel good about our offensive line. We stay healthy. I feel good about what we're going to be doing.
That I love it. And when you look at it, DMAC, the starting unit is a unit where your two bookends haven't been on a Sooner team playing losing football.
Yep.
You know, I think that matters.
Yep.
I think having the kind of talent, this is the first time, but what did they say about Bimbo? They said he needed 3 years to be able to recruit like he wanted to recruit, that Riley did not supply him with the numbers, did not supply him with the okay to go get some of the guys he wanted to get, some of the under the radar guys that he's had success with. Orlando Brown was a three-star recruit.
Yep.
Drew Samia was not some five-star, you know, really the guy was Creed Humphrey was pretty highly rated. You know, Ben Powers, I think, was a transfer or a junior college guy, if I remember right. And you had who else was across that line prior to that? But it wasn't made up of a bunch of just five-star studs. Beanbo has always been good at finding guys who had some nasty to them, which they were missing in Ozeta. We saw it on tape. 54 did not get enough credit a season ago for how often he just did his job and how often he did it with a little bit of nasty. With EPL, you noticed it. I think because he's a young guy, he hadn't gotten many reps. People highlighted it when he came onto the field. 54 last season, especially early on, easily the most consistent guy. But DMAC, let's move over to the other side. On defense, I will say this, with our preview that we did of the secondary, talking to Lance about the backers, I don't think there's a whole lot of surprises on the defensive side, but just for sake of getting it done, we'll end with the D line because I want to go over tackles and ends and talk about that and where we see that playing out. But guys, you heard it here first. At the right cornerback spot, you've got Gentry Williams. I think we all thought if he's healthy, we've said it, first round guy, if he's healthy, all the right tools to be an elite cornerback, to play the boundary, play the field. He can do all the things you need. And one of the things that OU has missed with him is that perimeter run stopping, good tackler on the edge when guys try to get outside and play that lateral game. He was aces against Texas back in the Gabriel year where Gabriel threw that pass to Nick Anderson. People forget Gentry was so vital for that win, what he did defensively,
100%.
not just the early INT, but on the perimeter as well, just taking things away. At free safety, you got Boganowski or RSJ, Jaden Hardy at that third spot. You got to know that Jaden Hardy's going to work his way into that lineup as the season progresses. Strong safety, you got Peyton Bowen, Reggie Powers at the number two spot. I think that's going to be a theme here, is interchangeability. Because you look over there, you got Jaden Hardy also at the third spot for strong safety. I'm going to get your thoughts on that. At the other cornerback spot, true freshman DMAC. I don't want to say I called this, but guys, when he was actually, I do want to say I called it. I'm actually pretty proud of this evaluation. I said Courtland Guillory was the best player in that class. I got to see him play a ton, watched him play basketball. He was far and away to me the most premier high ceiling athlete on that team. Jacoby Johnson level athleticism. And today Venables talked about how athletic Jacoby was, what they thought of him when he was recruited, that he just had some areas he needed to develop. Interestingly enough, I think you said this a year ago, or when he was recruited, Venables said that Jacoby was a more polished receiver than he was a DB coming into college, which I found interesting. But Guillory gets the nod there. At Cheetah, I know some people had some different thoughts. So, you know, Peyton Bowen, you know, other names being thrown around there. But at the end of the day, it's the first off the bus team. You got Kendall Daniels at the one spot at Cheetah, or Reggie Powers. Both of them are going to be interchangeable. Let me just say this. OU's going to do a lot with both of those guys. And then upon Dolby getting healthy, Dolby's going to be a major part of this whole mix. And then at will, You got Kip Lewis or Owen Heineke or Kendall Daniels. And then you got Taylor Heim rounding out that spot. And then Mike, Kobe McKenzie, or Sammy Omasigo. You got to think Kobe and Sammy split some reps in this first game. And then we will get to the defensive line. But D-Mac, anything that jumps out to you there? It feels like a lot of stuff we've already talked about, already discussed. But is there anything off the top that you just see as like, oh, that's interesting?
Yeah, I think the Boggs or Robert and the Kip or Heineke and or Daniels is interesting. I think to me what that says is this is how I look at it. Coach had a higher level of expectation for those guys that they probably didn't meet. I don't know if they were late or had some bad reads, but Kip Lewis, let me tell you, last year, Danny Stutzman didn't have an or next to his name. Billy Bowman didn't have an or next to his name. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that, again, sometimes there is a message sent through, especially the week zero depth chart. I'd be willing to bet if someone made me bet who's going to get the most reps Saturday at linebacker when the game is still meaningful, it would be Kip, without question. And the same thing goes for the safety position. Assuming RSJ is healthy, when the game is still in a balance, who's going to get the most reps at safety, I would put RSJ even probably before Peyton. So, again, I just remember being, you know, it was my junior year in the spring. I was a starting slot receiver. I was starting at H. Josh was number two. I was the number one H. I was a punt returner. I was a kick returner. I got hurt. I dislocated my finger or something. And going into the summer, I had a phenomenal summer. Going into fall camp, I had a phenomenal fall camp. Fall scrimmage, I had a couple drops. By the way, drops. What's my point? It was Damian Mackey, Josh Norman, the first game. I trotted out the first possession of the game. You know what I'm saying? But it was just a message like, you got to keep playing ball. Roy Williams, a big ass space, and then Brandon Shelby. You know what I'm saying? Like, Roy. Roy had like four spots, and then Brandon Shelby was
in the position named after him when he left.
Exactly. Roy back position. Whereas I had a bad scrimmage, and I always scrimmaged well. Every scrimmage, I always came to play. But I think, you know, one is just one of those things. And I was the first slot receiver to come out our junior season when we played against, I think it was UTEP again, whoever it was. I don't remember. You know what I mean? But it was a message sent to me, like, you had a bad fall scrimmage. So that was something, you know, Boggs, Kip. And then the other thing that I will say is I think what this also reads is Reggie, they're going to find ways to get Reggie on the field. Yeah. Reggie is not a two at Cheetah. He is the down and distance, third and long, second and medium, kind of mix it up with the smaller, you know, not an overhang, but a nickel type in the Cheetah position. But he's also the guy who, if Peyton rotates out, which he probably will every three or four possessions, Reggie will be playing high safety. And so that tells me a lot about what Reggie has done. Like, those are earned reps. When you're in that position, that was like my freshman year. Jarrell Jackson's the starter, but I'm playing every two or three possessions. As a never played college receiver before in my life, right? It's because from spring through fall or summer through fall, I earned those reps. Reggie earned those reps. Aside from that, Gentry stays healthy. We're in good shape. Gentry gets hurt. We got to move some things around. Oh, here's the other thing. I had a hot take, and some people believe, and some people bought it. So I'm going to say this, and I hope this doesn't hurt any Sooner fans' feelings or whatever, but I believe this to be true. Both Dobie's a tweener. Dobie's a tweener. And if Reggie is who we think he is, Reggie's a better athlete. Dobie has that. We can't forget. We all have a short-term memory. The beginning of the season, people didn't love Dobie. Dobie earned his respect last year because he started playing like a dog. He would make some plays in the C-gap, in the alley, and he started to show what he could do. But he wasn't a guy who just showed as stud, right? And then, of course, the defense changed dramatically when he got injured. But we replenished the ranks. And we developed a young guy, Powers, into a guy who, like, Powers looks like a Cheetah / safety. Dobie looks like a better athlete, Brandon Shelby. Roy Williams is on the field, and then Roy will walk off the field, and then Brandon Shelby comes in the field. I'm just telling you, teams were like, oh, hell yeah, right? Like, it's a different, it's just different. No disrespect to B. Shelby, who, by the way, was a dog. Dobie's the same thing. Dobie is a guy, if I'm playing receiver, I want him covering me just because he's thicker and he's not a 4-4 dude, right? So if I'm a receiver, I want that guy. If I'm in the slot, I want him. If I got to go against a guy, he's not like 6'2 and imposing who he can physical me up. And he's not going to turn and run 4.38 and jump 40 inches, right? So I say that to say, Dobie and Eli come back, but the people who are starting play well. Look at the measurables. Look at the measurables of Courtland. Look at the measurables of Gentry. Look at the measurables of Jacoby. Now you have the opportunity, and this was my hot take, in Eli in the slot on like a true slot corner. That's worth its weight in gold long distance. Go watch him in high school. Go watch how intelligent he was in the alley, in the hole, second level. That's where he got most of his money. He did, by the way, did a great job on the edge last year, and I want to give him his props there. But, like, he's a guy on a championship defense can play like a honey badger type of situation. Never has deep responsibility, right? He's always a guy lurking. He's a ball hawk. And, by the way, that boy hit you. Eli's a little guy, but he's going to form tackle you. Let Dobie and Bowen be guys who can just be ball players in space, and we have a benchmark 6'1 corner and a benchmark 6'1 corner and a 6'5 cheetah who gets backed up by a 6'1, 210-pound cheetah. By the way, guys, that's championship-level SEC defense. So I am not saying that I expect that to be the case, but what I am saying is when you develop at the rate in which we're developing and you bring in a guy like Kendall Daniels, who is, I told you, he looks like an avatar versus the other backers. Like him out there with all the other guys, he just looks, his head's like this much higher than everybody else's. Those are the places that turn your defense from good to championship level. Eli and Dobie can be chessboard pieces. Versus, again, I'll just say it one time. I know I'm being long-winded in saying this, but I just think it's pertinent to say. You're playing against LSU. It's 3rd and 7. They go move their best, tallest, longest, rangiest X receiver to Eli's side, and they say, I don't care what the coverage is, throw one of those face mask fades, right, where you're 6'3". We're going to throw the ball about 6'6". Catch it out in front. The 5'9", 5'10", DB just can't get there. You can't do that when you got a 6'1", 6'2 guy who's a little bit more physical. So those are things that I think about in that back seven that I think bode well for us as we get healthy.
Well, man, and at the end of the day, I think that we saw it a season ago with what OU was in their front seven. Not only one of the biggest front sevens in the SEC, which was highlighted at various times, but they were very good, right, against the run. They were very good. They got to where they were putting some pressure on the passer, right? You don't go out there and dominate. They dominated Alabama on the line of scrimmage. There were games. Yeah. The Tennessee game, they hung around and dominated at times on the line of scrimmage. And now you have bodies that are much more fully equipped. Guys like David Stone, who has made a massive upgrade in the detail of his game, what he's doing with his hands, what he's doing with his feet, a guy who I think I did it a couple years ago. I know for sure when Perrion was with Oklahoma, and then I believe I highlighted Dominic Williams last season also. The nuanced things that experienced defensive tackles can do is just different than what a freshman can get done. And David Stone was pretty advanced for a freshman. He was the guy who could split the double. He was the guy who had the swim left and right. He had good feet. He could set you up with the hips. He could do all of it. Now he has matured with his body. He is a lot different looking at the current weight he sits. And now guys like Grayson Halton, who we were high on, always kind of said he needed to be playing inside, that speed and that athleticism. now just a massive advantage. And he looks like some of those D tackles, D-Mac, that were on those early Stoops squads. Guys who, you know, are pushing 300 pounds, but lean in the face, chiseled, big shoulders, you know, broad, big legs. Guys who are just built to play inside. And Grayson, if he keeps on this trajectory, he's an NFL player. But want to go through the line of scrimmage here on the defensive side of the ball. Talk about our guy, you know, RMT, who we were high on since he's been to Norman, was the best pass rusher when he got on campus. This year, it's going to be about him not just finishing games, but also being a guy who's a tone setter. You know that he can get in there when guys are fatigued, but can he be a guy who, from the moment that that ball is snapped, is dominating his man? Or is it a deal where you got to wait for the fourth quarter, you know, for him to really get home? Does he have to count on that? You want guys who get this team off to a good start. So he's at the number one spot. You got PJ right behind him, and then Wyatt Gilmore, who is up to 6'4", 250. And just going through, by the way, PJ, 6'4", 260, around what he was at a year ago. RMT playing at a solid 250. Inside, Dominic Williams or David Stone. It's good to see David get that, you know, quote-unquote one spot. And then right behind him, Marcus Strong. And guys, I was high on him when he got to OU, but I said like 2 to 3 years. He was very raw, but he was one of the more impressive guys. And then you got Jaden Jackson. I'll let you speak on him. Grayson Halton. And there's Jaden Jackson or Grayson Halton, by the way. And then Trent Wilson and then Nigel Smith, who we know has moved inside now. I said when he came to Norman, when he was recruited, thought he was a good player, but never thought he had the explosiveness to play on the edge. You move him inside, to take your words, he becomes a plus athlete, a guy who can get the job done on the inside. And then on that other end spot, you got a guy in Marvin Jones Jr., who's a seasoned vet, or Taylor Wine, who's 6'4", D-Mac, almost up to 280, playing that spot. So your thoughts on this defensive line? I didn't mention Okoye, who I'm just going to tell folks, he will play this season and he will be seen. He is a freak when it comes to just being an athlete, probably one of the more freaky guys in that room with his twitch and his get off of when the ball is snapped. But D-Mac, curious to hear your thoughts on the defensive front.
Well, hey guys, listen, we'll have the best defensive line the second Saturday of the season. We'll have the best defensive line the second Saturday in October. And we'll be hard pressed to see another team who has a better defensive line than us. And that's not crimson colored glasses. That is the national pundits, the regional pundits, obviously all local guys. That front four has everything you need. Jaden Jackson is probably the best single-handed guy taking on double teams in the conference as a freshman at the zero technique. I mean, like last year, he was immovable. He could split them. If you went 1v1, he would kick your ass. Like, he was an ass kicker as a true. By the way, he totally outshined Dominic. Let's leave Stone out of it, because Stone is primarily a three. Unless they go in the two eye situation, when they go two eye head up on both sides. He totally outshined Dominic, and we paid all that money for Dominic. And Jaden was the guy who was the sidekick, the Robin to Stone in high school. So to get a guy like that is awesome. Stone has the highest ceiling. Go watch the Ole Miss game when Stone gets in third and fourth quarter. Go watch how he gets skinny getting up the line of scrimmage, and just see how he plays in the guard center gap. He's never really on a man. It's a natural ability that some people have that others don't. Go watch that film and you'll see what his ability is. All right. And then we'll see if he can more consistently get it done this year. And then Dominic is a guy who in any given Saturday, he's going to do his job. If you give him an inch, he's going to take it. If you give him a gap, he's going to take it. Right. So that 0-3 technique tackle nose combo. And then you got Grayson, who's athletic enough to play end, but is big enough to play tackle. Oh, brother. And then you got Strong, right? So you've got five guys. And I think it speaks to development. It speaks to development. OU has done a decent job of determining who are the guys we need to keep who are not going to be dudes today, who can be dudes down the road. You spoke to them. I'm going to speak to them a year early again. By the way, I could flame out, but for some strange reason, Barry, we do a good job of this. I'm telling you, Nigel Smith inside is a guy who next year, when some of these guys are seeking higher aspirations, Dom's going to be gone. Stone or Jaden will be in their third season and being ready to get ready for the NFL. Obviously, Grayson will probably be gone too. Nigel's going to be a guy 3 years into the system, playing a position where he's grown 285, 290 pounds. Next year, he's going to be a hoss because he was not a plus end, but he was an end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of those end attributes another year in the program are going to be a big deal. And then the other thing I'm going to say is this. I don't know if ever since 05, maybe, I don't even think 08. I think 08, he's in a two deep. I think the end of the really good heydays of 04, 05, there's no way you go back and watch the film of Okoye. Like, what was our DN linebacker's name about 10 years ago? Was he number 34? What was his name? African name. He was kind of a one-trick pony, though. I want to say he was right after Stryker.
Oboe. Okoronkwo.
Yes.
Oboe.
Way higher ceiling.
31. Yes.
Way higher ceiling. I guarantee you if Okoye was on that team, he'd be starting. So what that speaks to is the level of athleticism and competition. Guys, Okoye looks like the prototypical weak side DN. He looks amazing. Yeah. He's not even in too deep. He might, when it's all said and done, have a better junior, senior year than the two guys ahead of him. Like, that's what his ceiling is. And again, you guys know me. I'm not a smoke blower. But when you watch freshmen, when you go watch Okoye last year when he got a chance to play and just see what he could do, raw as hell, didn't have a game plan when he got in the field. But assuming a season later, watching RMT, watching Marvin Jones Jr., watching Ween, who's come out of nowhere, like I might be the top dog, well, not top dog, but a dog. And I'm just telling you, another year, you said it, these young pups are going to experience winning. And they're not going to know what it feels like to be a loser. I mean, they were on last year's team. But I just think he's a guy who you want to have an Okoye as your third teamer. I'm just telling you. Like, that means you got some ass kickers. Because on Oboe's OU team, Okoye is starting. He's a sophomore starter, entrenched, because we didn't have the talent. Last thing I'll say is, go look at the defense. There's only one dude who doesn't have an oar with his position group. It's RMT. Enough said. You know what I'm saying? Kip has an oar. RSJ has an oar. You know what I'm saying? Marvin Jones Jr. Has an oar. The only dude who doesn't have an oar is RMT. And that's what I mean by the Roy Lee, right? Like, Roy Lee didn't have no oars. You wasn't nobody close to his hemisphere. RMT has that same type of respect right now.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking, this was just thought experiment, right? You go and look at, just pick out the second guy at every position and say, are they a starter or a main guy on Venable's first year defense? Every one of them, right? Taylor Wine, he starts. Okoye might be the best athlete on that defense. Right? Because that was the year Jaron Kanick, for those who remember, Jaron Kanick played a lot. Jaron Kanick walked on the field and you were like, man, super athlete. What's going on? And then you got Stone, Strong would have played, right? PJ would have been the best looking player on the field, right? You got Heinicke, Omasego, all these guys, man. You go back the first iteration of that Venables defense when he took what transferred out and what stayed in. The transformation, I think historically, when history looks back on this DMAC from where this defense was, even if Venables, you know, we're not going to put losses on the table, but depending on how this season plays out, the transformation that this defense has made is one for the record books in terms of NFL level talent at every single level. Regardless of how this pans out, you have guys on this team by sheer nature of their measurables that will see a cup of coffee in the league on Sunday, 100% at every spot. And that is what we said this team has been missing. When you have those guys, voila, you win a lot more games. It's not rocket science. It is just the way that it plays out. DMAC, I want to let everybody know, as we did at the top of the show, that we're brought to you by OU Insider, OUinsider.com. Go over there, get yourself a membership. And I want to segue into what we're going to be doing this upcoming season and this week. For those who do not know, every year, every game, each week, we pass out an award. We give that award on both sides of the ball. And that award is not MVP, is not who was the best player, you know, but we don't say, oh, player of the game on offense, player of the game on defense. Right, that's right. Everyone does that. We took the Barry and Max show spin, and it was off of something for all of our new listeners here on YouTube and abroad. DMAC, from your heyday is where we pulled the term from. Tell the folks. And guys, if you want to start hitting it in the comments, please be my guest. Tell the folks the award we will be passing out this season and maybe give an example, an idea of what folks can expect.
Yep. You guys know what it is, man. We had a four-star general on our defense. His name is Torrance Marshall. And we're playing A&M 2000 season. We got to find a way to win the game. We walk off the field, D-Mac. Y'all scared? You look scared. Nah, T. Marshall, I ain't scared. You look scared. Y'all let Robert Ferguson kick y'all ass. Don't worry about us. Damn it, y'all worry about yourselves. Go back and watch the film. Robert Ferguson was killing them. But long story short, T. Marshall was just like, who got them gorilla nuts? And the funny thing is the coaches started saying, God damn it, who's got the gorilla nuts? Who's going to make the play? You know, what's interesting is when I think about that now, like, think of the psychology. Think of the headspace you have to put yourself in to, like, that was our war cry on the sidelines. Like, who got the gorilla nuts? Defense ain't got no damn group. We walking on their side. Roy Lee, where you at? They walking on our side. God damn, D-Mac, Andre, what y'all are? Who got them? And then, boom, T. Marshall makes the play. Like, there's something to that. There is an element of the game, of competition, of just being a winner. Like, winners win. And I know that sounds cliche, but like, nah, it's not. We don't find excuses. We get her done. And gorilla nuts, man, it's a term that is what it means is when the play needs to be played or the possession needs to be won or you need to kick that guy's ass on 3rd and 17. You may not have been the receiver with the most TDs or the most yards. You may have blocked two backers into a safeties and got Quentin Griffin an 80-yard run. You may not have been, you know, the guy with the most sacks. You might have taken on the double team to get the guy to sacks, but it was apparent, it was clear, it was pivotal, right? And so, you know, you guys know, man, gorilla nuts player of the week on offense and defense. It's a big deal. By the way, the players pay attention. Last year, we had some of the players reaching out like, hey, man, I want to be gorilla. You know, so they understand. They understand what that means. And this year, we'll have the little burial cook up some type of flyer or something where to have the deal. And I'll be excited. You guys know our post game is right after the game. So we'll be doing our post game shortly after the game. 10 thoughts will come out. It'll come out on the board that night. It'll come out on the interweb the next day on video. But yeah, man, you know, it's about impact. It's about timing. It's about, you know, game changing or game saving, right? Who is making the plays when it matters? It's a term we use. It's a term that a lot of people get a chance to have access to. And when the coaches start using that terminology, you know there's buy-in. So looking forward to seeing who's going to win some Gorilla Nuts Game of the Week offense and defensive players this season.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But before we get out of here, D-Mac, just your thoughts looking around the various conferences. Let's get just a handful of predictions. I suppose we can hold some level of feet to the fire. But let's start with the SEC. What two teams, if you had to pick right now in the pre-show, we'll strap down a little more of where we finally see this season going. Yeah, I know we've already played, you know, a couple games in the 0 week, but we'll touch on who you think will actually win the conference and guys be looking out for that. But just two or three teams right now in the SEC that you think are probably going to be there when it's all said and done, and why?
Well, I'm going to speak to our schedule first. Bama is going to be a team that's reloaded. They've got the quarterback position, but they got another dude. Did you see the other guy that was behind Milroe last year? You didn't see that guy? Like, oh my God, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to get them at home. They've got a lot of returning talent coming back, and they're going to have a chip on their shoulder after last season, not even just for us, but I think they ended up 9-3 or something like that. I think they had three conference losses. And so that's going to be a team who I expect to be there when all the chips are out. I think LSU, again, just the returning quarterback is so critical. That's Nussmeier coming back, having his guys. He's got his receivers coming back. This is an offensive game that's played now. The SEC is an offensive conference now. Yes, in the trenches, they want to kick your ass, especially when we play out of conference. But these games are spread now with Josh Heupel and what's our guy's name that went to Mississippi State, and you got Florida. I mean, these guys are throwing the rock, and they're spreading people out. I think LSU is going to be a team to be reckoned with. I'm going to tell you who I think is overrated, and it's not because they're our arch rival. It's because they've got a lot of talent to replace, NFL talent, like actually real, like NFL dudes, and all puns intended with the arch rival. But Texas is overrated to me. And maybe a little bit of that has to do with the fact that I don't remember what it feels like to lose to Texas, because we kicked that ass except for my freshman year, and we should have won that game too. But I know the turnover is something that they're going to have to really figure out. All the skill guys gone, both running backs, three receivers, two of their offensive linemen. I think another one transferred out, and I think another one got injured. So they're going to
They lost four offensive linemen. Oh, yeah. I looked the other day. They got hit, man.
And so I think Texas is a team that's the shiny toy. They have the brand that the machine wants to be a contender. I think they lose Saturday. I think this Saturday against Ohio State, they have they are their first preseason number one team, first time in their history. Their preseason number one. It'll be a one week you know title that they hold. They're gonna be a good team. The second Saturday in October is going to be a toss-up. I'm not here to tell you OU's going to beat the brakes off of them, but I'm here to tell you they are not invincible, and they're definitely not the best team in America. If they weren't Texas, I don't believe the pundits would give them that spot. Give me LSU, give me Bama, and then obviously I think we're going to be the surprise team. Talent-wise, top-shelf talent. People minimize Mateer because he's coming from the Pac-10, but the dude – He's a returning starter. People minimize Ott, but the stable of Ott with the guys behind him. And again, our offensive line is something that I think is going to be a strong point this year. No one can talk smack about our defense. Even the crazy dude, the little whatever dude is in the comments just talking out of his ass. He's cute. That shit's funny. Ha ha. But like everybody who knows football has seen our defense and knows what they can do. All we need is an offense that's not going to slip over their own foot and turn the ball over consistently and have a plan. And it's going to make for a team that's going to win two or three more games just by virtue of possessing the ball. But that defense is going to be good enough, if we stay healthy, to play for a championship, SEC championship, you know, conference championship, and then get into the playoffs and see where you're at.
You know, D-Mac, I'm mostly there with you in terms of the top two, top three teams in the conference. I want to say, just from a sleeper standpoint, don't be surprised. I don't think they have any chance of winning the conference, so don't get me wrong. But I think Vanderbilt is probably going to sneak up on one or two more teams this upcoming season.
Come on, did they lose their quarterback?
No, Pazzi's back.
Oh,
no, he's back.
Okay.
He's back. Okay. So that will be interesting. And then the other piece, I think South Carolina is going to be a squad. They're preseason ranked 13, and they're a team that,
good pick.
Man, last year they had a handful of games. I don't know if you've been watching that SEC documentary on Netflix. I've been able to catch a few here late in the evenings. And that South Carolina team, what Beamer is doing there is very impressive. To elevate the talent like he has, to get a guy in there, a signal caller, a quarterback like he's got in there now, a guy who's a good athlete, can throw the ball, good leader, just kind of a South Carolina kind of quarterback, man. And let's see, I was curious. So at the end of the day, I think South Carolina is the team that's going to probably be right on the cusp of those top two or three spots. And then outside the conference, I think Clemson is going to be back to playing elite football. They have been slowly building that roster back up. I do. They return a quarterback. They got some guys coming back at the skill spots. I think they handle the ACC. And I think they have a little bit easier run to the playoff. And I don't think they're as beat up when they get there. You know, last year, yeah, I thought talent-wise, they weren't at Texas's level at every spot. But when you go watch that game, there are positions where you can see just how close Clemson was. And I think this upcoming season may be similar to Oklahoma, although Clemson had more success a year ago. They finally hit that notch above, right? They get to that threshold that you want to be at as an elite team. Won't necessarily call them a blue blood, but a team that is going to go out there and be favored in just about every game they play in. And I think it's an interesting point with OU that you brought up. Defensive line, going to be one of the best lines in the conference. And when they line up in every game, probably the best in the conference, save maybe Georgia, just by sheer nature of recruiting and numbers, right? But they're not playing Georgia on the schedule. And then I think Colorado is going to be another interesting team. Again, looking outside the SEC. Oregon with Dan Lanning. Who do they have up there playing quarterback? Who did they replace Gabriel with?
The kid from UCLA.
That's right. That's right. So
Malik something.
Yeah.
Stud. He was a five-star two or three cycles ago.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, we'll talk more about the Michigan game coming up. I think Michigan's going to be a very good football team this year. But, I mean, freshman quarterbacks, we've seen it at OU. We've seen it across the country. Dante Moore, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We've seen it across the country. It's hard to win big games when you have a freshman playing quarterback. Just is. Right. We saw what Landry Jones was when he entered as a freshman.
Here you go.
And then we saw what he was when he left Oklahoma. All due respect to Landry, you know. So it'll be interesting football season, man. And I think Oklahoma has a chance to be in the thick of it. And if you guys want to be up to date on all that stuff, check us out right here weekly on the Barry and Mac Show. Pre-game and post-game show, folks. That is where it is at. We'll be doing pre-show, what, Thursday, Friday? What are we thinking?
What time do we play Saturday?
Saturday, I think it's an evening game. I want to say five or six. Folks, get it in the comments.
Let's do
Okay,
Friday.
perfect. Perfect. So, folks, see us here on Friday. We're going to be doing the pre-show. And then post-game, man, D-Mac, we've kind of nailed it down, but we do it as soon as that game is over. We are live, guys. So make sure you hit the notification bell. Make sure you like and share. Let people know where you're getting your info from. If you guys have been listening to this show, the Courtland Guillory stuff would have been old news. RMT, old news,
three
right? You would have been
ago.
On 3 seasons ago, man. So we've been on it. That's just stuff that me and D-Mac enjoy talking about. We enjoy the evaluation, the looking at players, watching the film, thinking the game and visualizing where guys will play. I go pretty in-depth with the evaluations on OU Insider, you know, to the point of like checklists and like really thinking about what guys could become when they get to that next level. But D-Mac, as always, closing thoughts to round us out. Really the final preview show, man. This is it. It's game week. So what are your thoughts, man? Let's get us out of here.
I saw someone asking in the chat, do they think we're going to be a playoff team? I think they have to expect to be one. I love that the defense came out chest out saying we're going to be a top five defense. I don't know if you saw that, but the captains came out and said we're going to be a top five defense. I think that's a good thing. Go on that early. It is game week. I'll say this to you guys. Shout out to all the people supporting the show. Parker Thune posted a commercial. Mark Clayton's posting a commercial. We got a couple other people coming out. Guys, you guys make this thing grow and go. So I'm super grateful for you guys for rocking with us. We promise to bring the pregame, the postgame, and 10 thoughts every single week. We'll have guest speakers. I think we're going to have Lance back. Lance killed it last week. I was super impressed by Lance's by the way, he called me out for the Sproles play. How dope is that? He said, I didn't play in that game. I thought that was pretty dope. You know, it's funny. Yeah. On the pod, like a day before, somebody was like, Lance Mitchell wouldn't have made a difference in that game. And then, of course, come to find out he didn't play. And then come to find out he played the next year and they whooped their ass. So maybe he would have made a difference in that game.
And by the way, we saw who the guy was in the clip, the short that got posted. Everybody wanted to know who the player was that played in that season. And guys that Lance beat out for that spot, it was in the short.
Yeah, I knew who it was. I just forgot that. I knew exactly who it was. By the way, that's my guy. Gameron is my boy. Anyway, guys, let's enjoy the season. Listen, I'm going into this season expecting us to kick ass, period. We don't have excuses. We don't have a rinky-dink offense. We don't have a bunch of brand-new mid-level transfers that we're hoping are going to get it done. We have entrenched starters on the offensive line. We have an entrenched starter at quarterback and at running back. Tight end's going to be interesting. Let's see what happens there, but we'll see how they use them. The receivers are going to be fine. But Burke's coming back healthy, and Isaiah coming from Arky, and the Gibson's coming back, and Keontae and those guys, they're gonna be good. But defense, you got to hang our hat on it. I need to see that front seven swarming like hornets, like straight up. I need to see Illinois State on the offensive side of the ball struggling to get first downs. And on our offensive side of the ball, I want to see our scheme look. I don't care if we know what it looks like yet, right? Because we'll be seeing a brand new offense too. I want them to know what the hell they're doing. I want them to look like they know what they're doing, and it's very coordinated and pristine. So game week is crazy to me. We did all the position groups, yes?
Yep, that's it. That's all of them.
We got them all done.
You got they didn't hit specialty. We'll talk about kicker, punter when we come up in this show, because I think that'll be a factor to consider down the line, right? We'll talk about those guys. And it was interesting. Ott was third on the depth chart. Kind of goes to your point of sending a message. Third on the depth chart at running back. First is kick returner, right? But we know it's a little more interchangeable. It's just interesting.
Yeah. But guys, support the channel. We don't market ourselves. I watch all these other people and they market themselves all the damn time. I don't think I've ever said it. Guys, support the channel. Share the videos. Tell your friends about us. The goal is, I'll tell you guys, here's what I want to do. Here's what I'm going to do, Barry. We get to 2,000 subscribers. I've got some signed championship merch. We get to 2,000 subscribers. I'm gonna Nah, 2000s. We're gonna have 2000 anyway. Screw that. We get the 5000. I gotta treat this like I treat my business. In my business, I compete. We get the 5000 subscribers. I got some signed championship merch from the year 2000 season that I would be willing to part ways with for somebody who supports the show. I think it's going to be somebody who leaves comments and stuff. Like, The Truth is always rocking with us. Mac is always rocking with us. Madrano's, I mean, some of you guys that are on the show tonight, you guys rock with us. And I appreciate that. You guys have been rocking with us. By the way, Carlos, subscribe, baby. Subscribe after we get that ass. Listen to the show for the rest of the season, dogs. No problem. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Subscribe and learn a thing or three. Learn a thing or three about football. Listening to the Barry and Mac show. But you guys are awesome. I appreciate everything you guys do for us. And Barry, it's always a pleasure rocking with you, bro.
Absolutely, man. Guys, as D-Mac said, I don't need to say nothing else. Subscribe, like the show. Go share it. Pre-show coming up this week. We do extra stuff on the member side. So that's a little more in season. We look at film. We're going to be breaking some things down. And I am doing just some watch-alongs of some highlight tape on there. So definitely worth it. If you're into the recruiting stuff, go over there and check it out. I'm just doing some, it's not show produced, polished. We're just watching guys play, commenting on what's going on. And we might do some other fun stuff as the season goes. But folks, thank you all for tuning in tonight. We will see you soon. And